My interests are in central nuclear collisions, and I move around in energy. And in different energy regimes, there are different approaches that are used to those collisions. In general, these approaches are done in space-time. And I mention this because when you go to consider peripheral reactions, most common approaches are in, done in energy momentum space, because you can reduce those problems to stationary problems where you have a constant flux coming in and populating certain channels. The number of channels is limited. For central collisions, you deal with a number of objects interacting, populating a continuum of channels. And in the lowest energy end, the approach which is most fundamental, however limited, is the time-dependent Hartree-Fock. And in the time-dependent Hartree-Fock, you just solve self-consistently Schrödinger equations for a set of states. And normally the potentials which these states are subjected to are calculated self-consistently, so the density is sum over the densities for the different states. The occupations for the states in the time-dependent Hartree-Fock are 0 and 2 or 1, either state is occupied or not. And this time-dependent Hartree-Fock is used for different purposes. So one is actually you study giant collective excitations. So you as you start with the state which is represents the ground state nucleus, and then you subject it to the disturbance of certain symmetry, and you see how the nucleus reacts to the disturbance. Then another is fusion. And right now people investigate various effects associated with the structure, such as, for example, the deformation of the initial state and how the deformation is induced during the fusion. And in general, I can say it's also used for deep inelastic collisions. So where sometimes fusion may occur or not occur. If you go to high energy, then the approaches are primarily kinetic. And in the kinetic approaches, you solve some kind of dynamics which is based on the Boltzmann equation.
Pavel, before we leave, time-dependent Hartree-Fock, do you have any simple way of characterizing how well does it work? I mean, it's a huge history because
it has a huge history, yes.
But it's completely uncontrolled.
So actually what I mentioned here is actually somewhat limited scope compared to the initial ambitions. So what are the flows of the Hartree-Fock? The flows are lack of fluctuations. Lack of fluctuation. You study the mean trajectory for the system.
Lack of correlations.
Lack of correlations that can produce fluctuations. If you one problem with sort of qualitative deficiency of the Hartree-Fock is when you go up with energy, if you study how nuclei fuse, what Hartree-Fock produces is, let's say this is angular momentum, this is incident energy. The fusion starts when nuclei start touching and dissipating their their original motion. Collective motion goes into internal degrees of freedom. And with increasing of energy, you increase the range of the impact parameters or angular momenta for which this happens because you overcome the Coulomb barrier. So the cross section increases. But then what Hartree-Fock predicts is that for central collisions above some threshold energy, a window opens up for which your nuclei are don't fuse. And they just pass through each other. And so fusion occurs here, and this is so-called low L window. And this has been a prediction of Hartree-Fock, and people started looking for this low L window, and then they never saw it. Actually, the fusion cross-section behaves something like this, in this fashion. In Hartree-Fock, it behaves in this fashion, or this is, there is no fusion over here.
But when you say that you disturb, and you never use it for an initial value problem, do you? So you never kick a system and see how it evolves in time.
Yes, you do. Yes, you do.
But then, using Hartree,
well,
it would just go on forever.
Yes, and you do the Fourier transformation, and then from the Fourier transformation, you read off the energy, excitation energy, which you compare to the centroid energy from the data. So this is done. And in particular, the only other way is run the RPA, which is basically expansion of the Hartree-Fock for small amplitudes. To RPA, you can add damping, which you, at this point you don't have in TDHF. So there's some the advantage of RPA, but you can also do the, you know, people do time-dependent Hartree-Fock, particularly relativistic, where RPA is technically more difficult.
So that's the damping is not important?
Damping is important. Damping is important. But people have different ambitions, you know, in different... but yeah, it is used. And right now, this fusion is actually becomes quite an industry, particularly when with because people start now very low cross sections, so they go deeply to deep sort of sub-threshold region somewhere here and start at this end, and do also fusion with the radioactive nuclei. So you have interplay of the structure and fusion dynamics. But what the deficiencies are, because there's one issue. There is this issue, which is, you can say this is an average effect of fluctuations. Because there's a lack of fluctuations in terms of collisions. And I would say you can introduce it on an average basis. But also there is are fluctuations on a case-by-case basis, where you observe different final channels in one reaction. And the TDHF will give you just a center for a given starting angular momentum, while the reality is, you know, this may be, let's say, a Z of the final nucleus coming out from a deep inelastic. So you will get one value in TDHF, which may be fractional in others.
So you're saying for very short times it can be used?
You can you need to know what you're using it for. So you can use it for average values. If your system goes through a trajectory, which for example, which just broadens, you know, the population of the channels, you can sure use it for the center. But if the distribution becomes like this, then it makes no sense of talking about any kind of average.
So average, you mean, for instance, to integrate over a large momentum range?
When you integrate over large, some kind of parameter describing final channels. I mean, as an example, for low energies, one approach which has been proposed was wave packet dynamics by Feldmayer. And wave packets are so average out, you know, they are large, so they average out the features of the dynamics. If they put two wave packets against each other, which they are supposed to represent two nucleons, they just pass through each other And this is the average trajectory. Okay? And the reality is you populate 4 pi. So in this case, using an average trajectory makes, you know, makes no sense to represent the 4 pi. Okay.
Is it true that every, so I'm more familiar with relativistic Hartree, mm-hmm. Yeah, you have a lot of symmetry, and so there's a lot of conserved quantities.
Yes.
Like for every label alpha, there's a conserved quantity.
Yes.
So here it seems that the absolute value squared of phi for every alpha is conserved.
Yes. So the density matrix, the density matrix which you construct from here, so let's say, is at every time you can diagonalize it at any time in the future of the system, and you will always get eigenvalues which are 0, 1. And this will never change. So this is a structure which is preserved.
Right. But it's not preserved if you go beyond.
If you don't, but there's the attempts generally to go beyond TDHF have been rather heavy-handed. That is, you start with this and then you add something. You know, some. Microscopically motivated changes in the occupations or jumps in the on the occupations. Okay, so you go to high energy, you have kinetic approaches, and this is true from energies which are you know, they can be 10 MeV per nucleon to RIC. So F is a Wigner function for a particle, and this here there are some type of collisions. And F is supposed to, that is, if you take say the density matrix, and maybe you can generalize it and give it 2 arguments. Then, if you were to Fourier Wigner transform this, x prime. You should get the Wigner function at average of the coordinates and the time is already here and some four momentum p, but this should be on shell, so the 3 momentum and 4 momentum should be related with some dispersion relation. Okay. So these are basically, these are 2 approaches which are in some, in at least considerable domains are derivable. And the one question which you can ask is, I mean, these are, so this is, these 2 descriptions are disconnected as one is carried in phase space, the other is in terms of wave functions. This one connects to the structure of the nuclei. This one lives on its own. The connection can be done through energy functional, which, let's say, here you write an energy functional in terms of wave functions. Here you write an energy functional in terms of Wigner functions. And you can connect them for weakly non-uniform matter. One problem which occurs is to what extent this one knows the limitations of that approach. One can also ask the extent to which this kind of approach is justified. And what you can do is you can one way to you can look at the derivations of the this kind of kinetic approach, starting from microscopic many-body theory. And the time-dependent many-body theory, one available approach are non-equilibrium Green's functions. And if you go with the single particle description, both of those approaches here are single particle, then non-equilibrium Green's function approach, you will look at the single particle Green's function, for which you can write the Dyson equation. And I have to say, or at least already this, I mentioned this earlier during the meeting, it's already this equation in general, if the self-energy is not exact, but self-consistently calculated from the Green's function, then this approach has no fluctuations either, just like Hartree-Fock. This approach has no fluctuations. This approach has no fluctuations. That approach has no fluctuations. This one, all three of them have no fluctuations.
It's really just a definition of the self-energy. So
right, but the point is that if your self-energy is a functional of the Green's function
alone,
it's has no fluctuations.
So that must be a problem in language. I still don't understand. This can be an identity, as you wrote it down. I mean, it's usually the Dyson equation itself is an identity for field theory.
Okay, if you want to look at the fluctuations, if you want to look at the fluctuations are the smaller the system, the stronger are the fluctuations, right? I mean, relative to the averages.
Maybe just proceed then.
So what you can do is you can go to the problem of two particles, okay, and ask yourself, what if they interact and I give them some interaction, you know, some potential or anything, and then I look at the single particle description and you look at the information, where the information about the fact that it's just two particles contained. Okay, and it's you get an infinite series in self-energy. Whenever you terminate that series, you get a Hartree-Fock type approach for two bodies, or for one body within two bodies. So this has a flow. Whenever you work with the Dyson equation, and you will always use some finite expression for the self-energy in terms of Green's function, you will be stuck with this mean field aspects of this.
So what is actually fluctuating when you say no fluctuations?
No fluctuations is that the what you will be getting as an answer is what you're studying here is the evolution of the single particle quantity under the mean value of the self-energy, which is averaged out over different possibilities for the system.
Can I ask why do you call this single particle?
Because it's a two-point function. It's a two-point function. I can calculate single particle quantities
of an elementary field
creating
or destroying a
single particle. I can calculate some two-body quantities for the system from it, but they're limited. I mean, the energy, you know. But in general, I cannot calculate any two-body quantity or higher body quantity.
Okay.
any kind of expectation value to, that refers to one object being here and another object
it's
being
there. It's a different language between field theory and body theory.
It can be.
About two-point functions. That's a single body.
Single body. Two-point function is...
many body yes. theory. So to see two-body correlations, you have to go to a four-point.
Yes, four-point. Yeah. For in the field theory, you will also interested more can be interested in odd number. Usually in low energy, you work with fermions, and you're just interested in even powers. Okay. Now, if you try to see under what to get the Boltzmann equation from this, you will apply the inverse, and this is all on the contour that has been already discussed for evolution, and the contour codes the evolution of Bra and Ket in the expectation value behind the two-point function. And you can restrict the order of the operators in the Green's function and get the equations of motion for the generalized density matrix of the system. So you will get this kind of equation. And these are here convolutions of these two-point functions, and let's say you can get this kind of. These are this would be the generalized density matrix. This one is the density matrix, and this one. This is a propagator type function. And for the propagator itself, you get this kind of equation, which where again these are convolutions. Now, if you want to go towards the kinetic equation, what you would be looking is at the distribution of particles or objects in or some density. Simultaneous in phase space, that is at a certain location at certain time at corresponding to some energy momentum. So you would be doing you would be looking at the Wigner transformation of these kind of convolutions. So let's say some function of a x1 x2 b x2 x3, and in the arguments, and somewhere here you have an h bar sits, and in general what you will when you are close to limit where this kind of kinetic approach applies, then the function should be relatively smooth in position and in momentum, which means that they will be sharply peaked. They will be relatively smooth in this average coordinate and will be sharply peaked in this difference of the coordinates. So those two functions will be picked in the difference, smooth as a function of sum of their arguments, and you can in this limit you can expand this convolution in such a way that this kind of convolution is approximately a product of the Wigner functions for these two quantities a and b, plus a correction which is of the first order ingredients, and this correction can be represented as a a Poisson bracket of the two. Now, if you carry out this kind of Wigner transformation of those equations and use this expansion, you find that the two first order in momentum space this generalized density matrix has indeed this kind of structure that it's basically non-zero only in the vicinity of certain energy for a given momentum. So you have this plus some gradient corrections. And what you can notice, if you once you go to the already this kinetic limit, you find that this is also of the same order as gradients, and this has a real part and an imaginary part, and this imaginary part is also of the same order as gradients. Therefore, this this Green's function can be written as delta. This inverse is generally has a structure of, let's say, non-relativistically, it would be omega minus p squared over 2m, or you know, relativistically it might be omega squared minus p squared, and so on. So this will have a structure of this kind of Green's functions times something, and this something you can call the this your Wigner function over here, f, occupation function. And then you can collect the after realizing that this will be the basic structure, you can also look at the you can look at an equation which for the gradients alone, and you find this kind of equation, which is called a generalized Boltzmann equation. Okay.
Can you say something about how important off-shell effects
are?
Might be
okay. So this is a general problem with this equation. So the equation, these are Poisson brackets over here, and they involve, these are four-dimensional Poisson brackets, so there's a differentiation with respect to position, time, momentum, and energy. Now, if you put here a function which is a delta, or close to a delta, and you take a gradient, of course, it's even you get the even stronger singularity than you started with. So this kind of equation cannot be valid if you consider it actually simultaneously in momentum and energy, because you will have always an unintegrated singularity sticking into your eye. So to remedy this, you have to integrate it. And you can integrate it over energy or one of the momentum components. The momentum component seems to be, you know, like ridiculous, but I've seen it done in the literature in some condensed matter context. It was simply a problem where energy was a good quantum number and two of the momenta and third momentum not. So that's what they did. So, but you need to integrate this singularity in any possible way. So, you know, for example, over energy in the frame where you're sitting. And only then you can actually get quantities which are not singular, which can be actually gradients which can be small. Now, there's another limit where this, if you look at the limit of there are actually two limits where this equation is valid. One is when you integrate over energy, and another limit is hydrodynamic limit, where the dampings or this kind of self energies don't govern the time development of the system, but the scale for the time development is set from the outside. And in the hydrodynamic limit, in the local equilibrium limit, this kind of function will be given by, this kind of Lorentzian shape times thermal occupation, or plus one, let's say, if I deal with fermions. And here you see the off-shellness, where the off-shellness is the scale of the off-shellness is given by the imaginary part of the self energy. What people have also done was, if you look at this equation and you look at those various the expansion that leads to this equation, you can ask yourself whether for reactions, nuclear reactions, this is valid. And for this kind of approximation, like here, since the widths, if you consider it explicitly, it would be of the order of the self, of the imaginary part of the self energy or gamma. This gamma needs to be much smaller than the typical energies that you deal with. Okay, and if you look at reactions at few hundred MeV for the beam, then you find that, let's say, for 400 MeV in the center of mass, this may be, but also it can be any energy, but close to the final freeze-out. The energies of the particles of the order of 100 MeVs. But gamma is also can be of the order of 50 to 100 MeVs if you consider just the collisional estimate. Okay, so actually this expansion does not hold. And this gamma needs to be small actually with any characteristic energy in the system. And one of the characteristics energies also which you can take is the dependence of the self energy on energy. And it's governed by two scales. One is the typical energy that the particles have, but also what you find is you find that there's classical interaction time appears also here. So this condition, which you can write that gamma has to be small compared to any typical or relevant energy scales, actually contains also the what we normally consider as a condition for the kinetic limit, is that the mean free pass has to be large compared to the interaction range. Okay, it's all contained into this.
But you say nuclear physics is only borderline satisfying.
It's
or not.
Well, there you have issues of, for example, delta, which is explicitly not satisfied. The broad resonances, which are broad also in free space.
And you don't want to use this Hartree approximation because then you would put gamma to zero.
Then you would put gamma to zero. But the point is that this is not good. That is not good either. Okay. I mean, you have to accept that this is not good, and at best you can treat it as phenomenology. Okay. I mean, to some extent that's the case. But then you have to be careful how you go about the phenomenology so that you get relevant, you know, meaningful results. I will show you. This is a very old work. This was my PhD thesis. I will show you a comparison of the actual dynamics done with this and dynamics done with this for conditions that representing the nuclear situation in nuclear reactions. Now, people try to go about, you know, cope with the fact that this is not a good equation and go beyond this. And one thing which is important and what is very useful as far as this equation is concerned is that the fact that this distribution of particles in position and momentum can be represented in terms of so-called test particles. That is, F is represented in terms of a set of delta functions. So we have F of R, P, T, and there are some particles at positions Ri and momenta Pi, and these just satisfy Hamilton's equations. And with this, you integrate the left-hand side of the equation. You cannot use it, since these are deltas, you can only use it as under averaging, but that's not bad. And what's important about this is what is with these test particles, you study the portion of the system which is important, where there is a significant density of the particles, and you don't numerically you don't spend your time waiting in empty space that maybe someone comes by. Okay, if you solve these kind of field equations, these are field equations which you have to solve on the mesh. You have to distribute your mice everywhere, and the two nuclei collide over here, and maybe they will, you know, something will break up and come out this way. You need to sit with your mesh over here and be prepared for this possible event.
So when you always point to this identity, this Dyson equation, you say you solve that. You must have something in your mind so you did a specific truncation. You say you compare it.
Yes, so I did specific. So the ones that I did just the simplest, which gives collisions. So it would be this kind of self energy. So you have a cut, and you have an amplitude for the collision. And this was done in a situation where this amplitude squared was approximately equal to the nucleon-nucleon cross-section. And if this Boltzmann expansion applied, then the Boltzmann dynamics and this dynamics should agree with each other. Pardon? Okay, it's a vertex. So do you have some range over there?
I mean, what kind of fields are there?
Oh, these are nucleons.
So four fermions.
These are four fermions, yeah. So it has some range which gives you the shape to the scattering cross section and also some dependence of the cross section on incident energy of those.
What is the application, I guess, you have in mind?
Okay. The application is, what I'm interested at this moment, okay, at this moment I'm interested in between the gap, in the gap between this and nucleus, say 400 MeV per nucleon. And then after closing that gap, so see what else interesting can be done. No, these are, no, you have a nucleus coming on a nucleus. They interact. Okay, and then the system breaks up. And with some probabilities, you populate different momenta. And you can address single particle dynamics, but with the single particle dynamics, you can address also other issues, like some chunk breaks off, and it comes with certain average, with some average.
But in the kinetic approach, how do you put the initial conditions of the nuclear wave functions?
Oh, if you... So this kind of approach right now is already used for structure. And actually, it's mildly competes with the Shell model. Okay, this is a development from a few last years. Because it has effects of mean field plus residual effects of residual interaction.
So there, I guess, you can split the wave functions.
There.
But in the other approach, how do you compare it?
How do you compare it?
You're looking at single particle scatterings, aren't you?
Right, but in the once the system decompresses and you're in an asymptotic regime, then this becomes valid.
So you're not going to use that. The initial stage of the collision, but only later.
No, not only later, just to analyze the results. Mm-hmm. Okay. So, so people try to work with this equation. Now, this equation is an equation which has eight variables. So, three momentum, energy, position, and time. This equation has eight variables. Okay? So principally, there is no good reason to go from Dyson equation to generalized Boltzmann. This is so-called generalized Boltzmann equation as far as the number of variables are concerned. This one becomes more approximate than this. You started with with dynamics in eight dimensions. Here you are with eight dimensions. But what people have tried to do is to tweak this equation in such a way that you could use this kind of test particle approach, but in addition, have here a dependence on energy in such a way that this energy would also depend on time, and you would have some equation for the energy, which means a single nucleon, let's say, which has ill-defined energy, comes, let's say, with the well-defined energy, then interacts. Because of the collisions, it gets broadened and turns into a cloud of which contains different energy components. Okay, but this kind of equation directly doesn't allow you for the construction of this kind of approach. So what people have done, they turned, there's one term, this term belongs to the Boltzmann, the regular Boltzmann equation. That belongs to the regular Boltzmann equation. This is the left side, right-hand side. And then there's this odd term, which normally you can drop it because it's a gradient, and this is of the order of gradients, so this is of the second order in gradients. But what people did is replaced by phenomenologically this self-energy by using a relation which is valid in equilibrium. And once you do that, then you can represent this Green's function multiplied by some function which I'll spare you, which depends on the self-energy. Then all of this can be represented in this kind of function. Okay. What it does you is, what it gives you is allows you, puts you in the dynamics, the effects of the fact that when particles come into an interaction, they are not in an asymptotic state but are off-shell. Okay. And because of this, certain processes may be possible, which otherwise kinematically would not be possible. So this was tried. This particular replacement was done by Malfleet and Bottermans, and a significant amount of work on this replacement and the consequences was done by Knoll, Ivanov, Voskresensky, also Mosel, Kassing, all within one geographic region. Now, however, this hasn't been, apart from some test cases, it hasn't gained popularity. One issue which I see with this is that this is approximate. The equation itself, it's approximate when you go from here to there. The equation of itself is an interpolation between, as far as I'm concerned, between thermodynamic limit and this limit, but it has this it's without the integration over energy, the equation is not valid. Okay, let me think whether I want to say anything more. Maybe I'll show you now the illustrations, and then, yeah, go ahead.
What about normalization?
About the normalization of this? You can show that when you develop this test particle method, then you have to deal with a conserved current. And you can show that this Green's function multiplied by a function which is depends on the self-energy is conserved. And there are other aspects, is that the dynamics, that you can define entropy, and which increases, and with this replacement and this interpretation of this product in terms of particles, you get an increase of entropy during the dynamics. There are some relations which I didn't. There are some relations between the current and backward current, and there's a significant amount of physics in this. Interesting physics. It's renormalized. It's a renormalized because it's a renormalized by this multiplicative factor, and the renormalization involves both the derivatives of the real part and imaginary part of the self energy. Okay. Okay, so this is just, maybe I'll kill the light. Mm. no, it was this one. Okay, this is the illustration for the TDHF. So this is a typical fusion reaction, which is in particular one of the type that are studied right now, dependent on the deformation. This is fusion cross section that TDHF gives. So this is this rise as you increase the energy and the nuclei are more and more accessible. But then for the very central collisions, the TDHF gives transparency. And these are data which actually disprove this prediction of TDHF. They concentrated here on one aspect of the cross section for the fragments where actually this low angular momentum would be probed, and this solid lines are consistent with no window, and TDHF would give those dashed lines.
This is because there are essentially no collisions.
Because there are no, the motion is not damped enough. They just pass through. Now, this is an example of Boltzmann description. So if you... This is for intermediate energies. So in the Boltzmann description, what you can describe is the formation of the participant region with spectators chopped off, and the fireball forming here and expanding. The general description of the data is very good. I mean, you can look at different observables at different angles, different energies. And you use non-equilibrium Green's functions actually to help you derive terms, for example, in the collision term. So this here, over here, this was used to derive the production rates for deutrons in terms of three-body collisions. Now, next, I will show you a comparison of the dynamics. So what you study here is nuclear equilibration in nuclear matter. You start with the two Fermi spheres, which are separated. This is actually for 400 MeV per nucleon. And you start the evolution, and at the end, you should get the Maxwell distribution, thermalized distribution. Here is the evolution with the Boltzmann equation. Here you study the evolution with the Green's function, first starting with the uncorrelated state. That is, when you start the evolution, the self-energies are zero. And, And the last one is the Green's function evolution would switch on correlations, and the way you switch on correlations in the initial state is you start with the two spheres, but first you try to project the ground state from them, so you evolve along the imaginary axis. You don't want the, of course, the ground state would be a Fermi sphere at the center of the system, so you don't want that. So what you do is you put Lagrange multipliers, which keep two Fermi spheres apart, and then once you get to T equals zero, you remove the Lagrange multipliers and let the system evolve towards the global equilibrium. So when you look at these three evolutions, you find the following. In the Boltzmann, you have significant differences in the momentum population. So this would be the Boltzmann, these would be the Green's functions at high momenta. And the reason is the following, is that in the Boltzmann equation, you have two-body collisions. So in order to get particles to high momenta, they have to collide at least twice or three times to acquire high momentum, high enough momentum. Because if you just have two body collisions, they would be populating a spherical shell containing those two spheres over here. In the quantum dynamics, you don't have those restrictions. Times are short, so particles within those times can develop any momenta. So you right away get a population of high momentum. But although this, you're looking at high momentum, faster equilibration early on, when you look at the late stages of the dynamics, the Boltzmann equation is more equilibrated than are the quantile dynamics. And the reason here is the following, is that you have only certain energies for the particles, and within these energies which you have per particle, the temporal dynamics can only be this fast. You cannot make big changes in the system over relatively short time. So in terms of the Green's function equations, this is containing the memory time, which is the integration over the past. And so in the end, if you look, you can look at the effective equilibration rate. You can define these rates differently, and here you have one definition. And if the two dynamics were the same, then the rate for the for the quantum dynamics, which is plotted on the vertical axis, should be the same as for the Boltzmann. So you should have points along the diagonal. What I've done here is I actually artificially changed the rate, reducing and increasing. If you go to very slow rates, then the two agree. And if you amplify them, try to make the system evolve faster and faster, you actually, the system doesn't want to evolve. Just hangs on there.
So this column with initial correlations, could I think of that as coming from the one without initial correlations, just taken at some later time?
Yes, because what happens here, if you... This system ends up in the end having higher energy than that, because this one is cooled. You switch on correlations, you remove the energy from the system. What this system does is over a very short time, and it's actually very short, is basically like, you know, within this one Fermi over C, the system develops correlation. So the two body correlations equilibrate, but not the single particle distribution. So they equilibrate, but they release also kinetic energy. And so the system ends up here being hotter in this one than in this one, in that one. Okay. Next I'll illustrate the alternatives of the resolution of the problem. So one is, you know, you just forget it, use the Boltzmann equation and use it as phenomenological approach. And as an example here, is since I talked about this equilibration and how fast the system equilibrates, here is the study, experimental study of equilibration. This is gold and gold collision and other systems done by Fopai group at GSI. What they look is they look at the very central collisions and they look at the distribution of particles in rapidity. This is longitudinal rapidity. And they also look at, this would be these open triangles. They also look at the distribution in transverse rapidity, where they just take a random transverse direction and use it as a substitute axis, beam axis, and calculate this rapidity distribution along that direction. And the transverse distribution is always more narrow than the longitudinal, no matter what system you use, no matter what beam energy and so on, but they change, vary this. And here you have an example of how this ratio of the widths in the two direction depends on the beam energy for calcium on calcium. If you had complete thermal isotropy, it would be 1. It's actually around 0.5. If you take free cross-section, Boltzmann equation with free cross-section, you get 0.8. And to get down to the data, you have to significantly reduce the cross-sections. And you might say, well, I don't know where this comes from in the Boltzmann equation, but I will go with whatever gives me the stopping, whether these are quantile effects or really reduction of cross-section. What you find is, interestingly, what you find is when you, whatever, however you reduce the cross-section, you find that for that cross-section, you expect the same viscosity for the system. So you can use this as a tool which where you use a phenomenological approach and you tweak the cross-sections which are related to viscosity so you can deduce what the viscosity is for the actual nuclear system. And these are the type of viscosities which you get, and these would be the ones which you would have obtained with the free cross-section. And so you can estimate the values of the viscosity. This is towards the freeze-out at normal density. And you can also estimate in those reactions what is the entropy, and then you can use it to obtain the ratios of viscosity to entropy. And these are these points over here which were obtained in this fashion. And this is the expected Rick value, so you can see that it sort of lines up as if you go from the from low energy reactions towards Rick, it seems to drop the normalized ratio. I should mention that regarding this value of the viscosity, 20 years ago with Gulasi, we were considering the viscosity for quark gluon plasma, and we considered perturbative limit and also strong interaction limit, and we noticed that the viscosity depended on the product of momentum and localization size, and this should not be smaller than h bar. This gave us a limit on viscosity in terms of 1/3 of the quanta. If you use the density of the relation of the number density of quanta to the entropy, you get a limit of 1/12. Now I want to show a little bit what has been done beyond the phenomenological approach.
So is it a coincidence that it's 1/4 pi?
Well, I think we could manipulate and get 1/15 or something, you know, but it's because there has been a remark here that I think I asked the question about the viscosity in the strong limit, and someone said, well, but it's not an not a gauge theory, and I don't remember already what the comment was, but this is not related to any kind of specific aspect of the theory.
It's that statement, right? E lambda greater than or equal to 1.
Yeah, it's just that.
P again was what?
P is a typical momentum.
Typical
momentum of the quanta in the system. I mean, this is a kinetic estimate, but you can expect that even if you have something, you know, if you go beyond the kinetic limit, viscosity is always associated with the size of the equilibrium that you can maintain. The region, the size of the region within which you can maintain equilibrium.
Yeah, so let's see. So from this point of view, is there any way to evade that bound?
Well, you can change the entropy. We've done it this way, and you know, some couple of other ways. You can tweak the entropy, but also you can see that, you know, even if you modify the relation between quanta and entropy, you should, from our rough estimate, you can see which way it should go. I mean,
with lambda,
without
lambda
the 1/4 pi.
Lambda is the mean free path.
Lambda is so the localization region.
The special number here is that lambda is of the order 1 in units of the natural unity.
Yes, it's h bar over
so
p.
So the fact that p, the typical momentum of quanta, the typical momentum that quanta have is always the same, say. That contribute, but the fact that the mean free path is so short in those units.
But it you cannot localize the, you know, if you try to localize them more than one, if you try to excessively localize them, you will increase p, right? So.
Yeah, does it make sense to have a mean free path which is less?
Less than the wavelengths, yeah. here I want to illustrate these calculations with the generalized Boltzmann equation. So this is these are calculations by Juhem and Kassing, and this is one where it's just for illustration they took a nucleon incident on a complex potential, which is real part and imaginary part, and the nucleon comes with a certain energy, which is P0. It doesn't change, and it comes with a certain momentum, but then this momentum inside changes the average value, but also spreads out. And then the mass of the nucleon also spreads out. These are, each line is a different test particle representing that nucleon. And then in a full-fledged calculation, they look at the production of kaons, which are difficult to produce at moderate energies. And so if you have off-shell effects, then you get extra energy through which you can produce them, or you can produce them faster. So they find a significant enhancement in, of the kaon production, and in fact bringing them close to the data, at least for the high momentum tail of the spectrum. Now I want to show you just a brief illustration of what we are currently doing, and we are starting with the Green's function dynamics in 1D. At this moment we solve the equation for the density matrix just in mean field. So these are two slabs, nuclear slabs, which collide. This is in 1D. So two slabs collide, you know, density increases, then the leading residues come out, and then there's some matter stuck in between. And of interest, we don't do it in the terms of the wave functions, but we solve the equations of motion for the density matrix, because we then on top of this we are putting currently collisions. This is, next one will be still the density matrix, but now in two variables. So these are the two nuclei coming to each other. The diagonal in the figure gives you just the density, x equal x prime. And if you go perpendicular to the axis, this is x and x prime. You see how the Green's function depends on the difference of coordinates. So here you have, if you look at those, these bright ones are positive values. These are actually real values of the Green's function. And so you always have a maximum along the diagonal. It drops off as you go off diagonal. Here the spread is very small. It's inverse of the Fermi momentum. And then they collide, and then as they collide, then the density matrix spreads out, and this is associated with the fragmentation of the wave functions. And as they separate, you still maintain the this dominance of the diagonal, but now you also have off-diagonal correlations. And actually, when you look here, there are peaks. This is a correlation of one nucleus with another nucleus. And this is associated with the fact that the wave function of individual states have fragmented. Part of the wave function is going with one nucleus, part of the wave function is going with another nucleus. And their phases are correlated. Now, this correlation would be important if these nuclei were ever to meet these, and the possibility that one nucleon took off with one nucleus and another, and the same nucleon could have taken off with the other one. If they meet, these two possibilities interfere. So this is like, this would be important for two-slit interference. Okay? But in nuclear reactions, you actually have a situation where the system from some point on just expands and breaks and breaks and breaks. So these pieces will never meet or never interact. So what we are doing is we are taking this density matrix and we are slashing it along the diagonal, because beyond certain distance, the parts will never meet again. And if you slash this, you actually find that this kind of dynamics of the density is unaffected completely at some a fraction of a percent level. So that's it. Just to sum up, I told you about the TDHF at low energy, at the high, kinetic approaches at high, both have flows. The options are stay with the kinetic and treat it as phenomenology. You can try and fight with the generalized Boltzmann equation, gives some conceptual insights. Currently, we are trying to push the non-equilibrium Green's function approach. And if you look at the evolution of the density matrix, you find that it has both short-range structure, but also there's long-range. Thanks.
When you say you push non-equilibrium Green's functions and you have large couplings, you must have some loop expansion in mind, or
we will
see that the next correction after this diagram.
It will be again phenomenology, but pushed to a different position.
You stay within these two loops.
Yes.
Energy,
yes, because this is the only thing we can do. This we can do through repeated Fourier transformations. So this is that saves the computational time because you simultaneously fast Fourier transform, so we simultaneously get the self energies over the whole space for everybody, and we don't go to every you know 2 points. And calculate separately the self energy for that. So
you have inhomogeneous fields.
Yes, we have. We want actually to do 3D nuclei. I mean, we already have 1D, 1D on 1D running.
Why is one fast Fourier transform helping? I mean, you don't have any transform
invariants that you can use. Because you have convolutions, and these convolutions factorize either in momentum space or in configuration space. It's not all solved, but it's just you know it's enough for two steps, which are greatly simplified and already you know it's either you pass or not. I mean that's if we don't do that, we will not accomplish the calculation.
So actually, doing this in three D is still future.
It's future, but you can estimate it, and we need something like 8 gigabytes of memory. So, it depends because this is depends. So if you you need to have big lattice along widely spaced lattice along this direction, and then fine lattice along fine mesh across the diagonal. And so this 1D will be our testing ground, because here we can afford calculating, you know, doing exact calculations to any degree we want. And so we want to develop here the technology, and then as the estimates, you know, we need, let's say, 30 points along the diagonal this way and maybe 15 across the in the transverse directions, and maybe we can cut out a cylinder. You know, that's what we want to do.
But if you say 8 gigabyte, I mean, you have a memory integral.
Yes.
So do you mean 8 gigabyte at the end of your run with all the memory and time kept?
No. If we were, the point is that this short range in space also, we expect also a short range in time. In my experience, when doing this, I kept all the times, you know, because. Well, it was first, you know, I've done it first time and I didn't know better. But at the end, it was clear that you could keep, let's say, 5 Fermis would be plenty enough. And I don't know, presumably you do also, you remember the whole history.
Characteristic relaxation time and then several of them.
Okay, so this is what we want to do.
Such a characteristic time scale, there are other applications. implications, like if you have an instability that leads to exponential growth of correlations, then you can't do that.
So there are two factors. One is the relaxation time. The other is the distribution of momenta. These are distribution of energies. So both of them tend to cut off the integral. So that's what would be bad is a cold piece coming out into free space, and then the memory blows up. So we'll see. We'll see whether we need to develop strategy for particular regions, you know, or adaptive, some kind of adaptive strategy.
8 gigabytes is nothing. I mean, we used a tenth of a terabyte to.
That's what I mean. That's what I mean.
Is that 3+1 such an application with this tool in 8 gigabyte? I'm surprised. It must have a very coarse letters.
It will be coarse, but when people do 3D TDHF, it's also coarse and they survive. Of course, we want to push to higher energy, so they will pay for that. But we expect that as we progress in the coding, the computational options will just be advancing in parallel. I think I hope within 2 years we'll be doing at least 2D, and three 4 years we'll be doing 3D. Compared to TDHF, we have we have extra time, but there's more, because TDHF has this finite range of the finite sum of the over the wave functions, and we have a tail. Somewhere we will cut off. I mean, in this case, you had the cutoff of the momentum space.
Good.